Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Diaphim. Diaphim is from Eastern Europe. She's had ET experiences. She's had MyLab experiences. She's had a lot of training in the various dream states, various astral planes, and she has a lot of information to share, and we'll provide all of Diaphim's bio information on our dedicated YouTube channel as well as our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com. So without any further ado, Diaphim, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for inviting me.
The pleasure is all ours. Diaphim, tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to this awareness of these experiences and the abilities that you have.
Okay, well, I'll try to keep it short because there's quite a bit of details and experiences basically my whole life. So I'm going to summarize it, what I would think it's some sort of progression, not to really keep a track on what we're talking about. But I'm from Eastern Europe. My background, obviously, nobody's pure genetic with these days of any sorts when it comes to nationality. So being on that side of the world, I did go through war, Yugoslavian war. I was 8 years old when that happened, but my awakening process really started in childhood. Now, I don't remember having visitations or abductions when I was a child at all. I really do remember a lot of dream time training. It started off when I was about 6 or 7, and it was simple as me going to sleep, fall asleep, and I would wake up in my astral body, still in my room and in darkness. But I never felt afraid, and there was always this guiding force that I could never see beings or anything, but I would be gently led to literally hop, you know, in front of the window and go through the window, go on my balcony and just started levitating or started flying above the treetops or just literally flying around my town and navigating my astral body, you know, how I want it. And there was a lot of lessons that started off kind of like slow motion like that, but over the years, that kind of training progressed more to an instant travel. So that was like the slow way, but now it's more if I intend where I want to go, I'm just there. So it's much quicker. So with anything, that's how it started. On awaken time, it was more about having guidance always in the back of my mind. I always thought it was me. I never really thought of anything outside of me doing it, but I would have something like be observant or just observe, and I would watch people's dynamics of when they argue, and I would see energy being, you know, thrown around and pick out on the vibrations of the energies when there's exchanges. It just, I thought everybody can do this and that they're aware of it, and I was so confused. It was very confusing growing up. Like, why do people do that? Why don't they make a conscious choice to do a, you know, better? If they just stopped a minute before the argument and thought about it, they could, you know, completely change the probability of the outcome. So why would they choose down the path of argument? It was so illogical to me. The conflicts and arguments and hurting each other and causing pain was just so, it was devastating when I, you know, became aware of that. But later on, the war finished, and that was a really rude awakening into this reality, seeing death and destruction. And I was refugee in my own country in few places. There was not a lot of contact in that way in dream states. I don't remember, at least. But then it picked up again about age of 14 and 15 when I just became very much aware that I am here to do energy work. And it's all about the energy. Everything is energy. I just kind of instinctively knew that. And from that point on, it was me digging deep, really wondering, you know, why am I here? Why am I here in this date? Why am I here? Why am I born this year and this date? And why in this country? Why am I even human? Like, I had all these questions that I couldn't find any person around me that would wonder like I did. You know, I wondered about creation and eternal creation and how everything comes, where is it coming from, where is it going? Like, I had all these questions and I couldn't answer because there was no books at the time, there was no internet at the time, and definitely no people around me at the time to ask these questions. So I had to rely on myself, really, to dig deep and get some answers. because I was kind of driving myself crazy a little bit. But as I grew older, even after 15, I remember being 18 and saying, I really do need to leave my country because it didn't feel like home anymore. I felt like I was born in the wrong place, in a wrong family, and nobody around me understood me truly. So I decided to try to get out of the country and live somewhere where people may be a little bit more open-minded. And I figured United States sounds like a good idea. So that took a while to get here, but I finally did get here. And then my training basically picked up from where it left off. I guess that was where I needed to be. I really needed to come here. It was such an urge that I couldn't even battle it. It was something that was just so like important to me. And I couldn't say because of this, that, and the other. I just knew I had to be here. And then in 2004, I had a major activation that was truly out of this world, which it wasn't as much as it was outrageously different. And it's not common to people to go through that. It was normal to me because at that point, I already built my mind of knowing there's so much greater things out there. We're coming from a bigger place. We're going to a bigger place. There is a bigger picture that is around us. We're just not seeing it clearly. And I was wanting and waiting for that to be shown to me as a confirmation that it's not all in my head. And that's exactly what happened. And that experience in earthly time lasted about 15 minutes. So that was in 2004. I was 22 years old. And I consider that experience my activation time. That's where official job started, and officially I was ready to move on to my next level. And I call it my appointment with my future self. It's like a running joke, but that's kind of how I called it because I did not consider it. Aliens didn't come, and ET didn't come. It wasn't nothing outside of myself that did this. It was me from future that organized the event in the past, which was now, for me to wake up. Because that's where I'm coming from. I basically am from the future. Hence my favorite movies, Back from the Future, Back to the Future. And that event was really interesting. It was nothing I've ever read upon or heard about or could never even conceptualize. Again, that's a story in itself because seeing a vortex in front of you, I saw geomancies show up in a spherical form in front of me and work on my chakra without me doing anything. I was just laying down and activate my solar plexus area, and it went beyond and connected me to a consciousness that we call God or source, eternal source of creation. And becoming one with it was pretty amazing. And I'm sure there's many ways to get there. People had near-death experiences and different kinds, like kind of like all paths lead to the same thing. As long as you experience that pure love, that pure consciousness that we all come from, which is our true home, that's really all that matters. Doesn't matter how you got there. But once you remember, it's hard to forget. That's the whole point. We are not supposed to forget where we came from. So I consider myself lucky and blessed to have that experience because it just put everything else in a different perspective from that point on. I just did see it as all, we all are one. We all are made out of the same consciousness. Some of them are on the beginning stages of evolution, some of them a little bit ahead, but it doesn't really matter. We're equally loved and appreciated, and we will all get there where we need to be. So it's like somebody starting a race line and somebody is in the middle and somebody already finished it. It doesn't really matter. There's always people joining in here to learn and grow. And it's all about evolution of consciousness. It's all about ascending and progressing, that we're never stagnant and staying on one spot, on one place. Planets are evolving, humans are evolving, everything is evolving. So it was just a beautiful experience. So to try to keep it short, I guess I'll keep going. This is just me 22. I'm 36 now. Past that point, I still knew that the experience is so out there. I did not share it with anybody. I knew it was just for me because it was meant for me to wake up. So I could share it. It just wouldn't give you the same sensation, feeling, and understanding that comes with it. So it's cool to share it, but
Yes, please go ahead.
basically, only that one is really, it's just really expansive. I mean, the details of it was what I summarized from it. I'll just give you that much is that the spirituality that we think of is not just a simple la-di-da. It's not just a nice sweet talk, and it's not just being love light and what we call cluelessness. It's spirituality does equal to science and science of mechanics of creation. Everything is pretty organized and mathematical and coherent and in sync with each other. You can call it spirituality, you can call it science, even though that's very limited words and understanding of it. But spirituality is not just a good feeling. It's not just feeling good, thinking good, positivity. Science of ascension is totally something else. It correlates to your evolution of consciousness, your DNA, your upgrades in biological form and progress in every level. I mean, we exist in so many more dimensions. So there's all these expressions of ourselves. And even me on all the other dimensions are also progressing up too. I mean, it's just constant. So I realized the connecting, you know, the connecting aspect of it all, that we all in here together. Some of us are here. Some of us, I'm considering myself as part of that because of my later experiences, are on a very specific mission. We all have a reason why we're here. But I finally realized closer to why I'm here personally, which is something I have been asking my whole life, because I'm like, okay, so why am I here? So I had this experience, so now what? You know, what do I do with that? You know, it just didn't make much sense. And then I did start to read more of science and mechanics of creation, and I learned a lot, and it did keep my mind sane because I knew I wasn't the only one having these feelings and experiences. And a lot of these information bits were coming from a book called Voyagers of Sleeping Abductees from Ashiana Dean. I mean, she's called Yesha now, but there's the volume one and volume two really talks about the genetics and intruder races and angelic races and basically, you know, electric wars. And it's so much information that I was like totally relating to and resonating. And I was like, okay, I'm not crazy. I actually have memories of this. So it confirmed a lot of things. Life took over for there for a minute. I got married. I got divorced. I have two children. And a whole lot played out. But this was the most beautiful experience I had. And then in 2010, I had in October 3rd in 2010, I basically had the worst possible imaginable experience of my life. So it was literally black and white like that. Something, again, I couldn't even imagine could happen to a person. And it was what I call my kill attempt. And in that instance, there were entities involved and beings from different dimensions. The ritual was performed on me energetically. And then I was blasted basically with mind control, with what is it called? The skull to, what is
voice
it called?
To skull.
Voice to skull technology that was employed. And then I was basically fried with the microwave frequencies and energies as well. And that lasted for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I was losing my mind. I was dying. I was literally dying. I thought I would have to drop my body and continue my mission in different form because I didn't think I could make it through. I mean, it was literally not just saying, oh, they were frying me, I was hot, which I was. I was burning on the inside. My cells were literally being fried, and I can hear them being fried. And as well as talking in my mind, I mean, these guys, I can hear three operatives speaking to me directly and saying, you know, you're done. That's it. There is no God coming to save you. There's no one coming to help you. This is it for you. And, you know, God doesn't exist. It's all a joke. There's all this random things, and I just kept going, please shut up, you know. They will play, like, country music, which is one of the kinds of music that's really not in my flavor, just to annoy me for days. Wouldn't let me sleep. Wouldn't let me eat. Basically, I would have the physical twitches, and, like, my body would jerk in weird ways, and it was really bad. And day three, I finally said to myself, well, if I just don't, you know, if I lay down and don't fight in some way, I mean, you can't fight them. If you go in their level, you're going to lose. Meaning if you get angry, if you get upset, if you start feeling sorry for yourself, they got you. So what I did, I said, you know what, I'm going to pick up and I'm going to live my life as though nothing is happening just to annoy them, because I'm going to prove them that it's not working, even though it is working. I was kind of losing my mind. I went to one of the larger grocery stores in the area day three, because they really thought I'm going to give up at this point and they can just finish me off. And that didn't happen. So here I am grocery shopping and I'm putting items in the basket, and the entire power goes off in the store. And it was basically 7 p.m., so it was kind of darkish outside. It's October, so it gets darker earlier. And it was pitch black in the store, and I knew these guys did that. And through the you know how there's music in stores, they have speakers everywhere connected, and they're literally riding on that wave from the speakers, basically just, you know, so I can hear. Nobody else can hear this but me, right? Because it's encrypted to my encryption, to my signature, so I can hear them. And they're literally yelling at me to stop, just yelling, stop, stop, stop. Like they wanted me to just stop and just drop dead, basically. And it wasn't working. So I literally said it out loud. I'm sure people around me thought I was crazy because I did appear crazy. This is how people judge this. You know, you're ready for a mental institution. And I remember looking up to the speaker and saying, I'm not doing anything. I'm just grocery shopping, you know, and called it the day, and went home. And I had random people around me, like a homeless person, get possessed by these entities. And they would walk up to me with their pitch black eyes. There's no whites. Talking to me, and I was in the mode of fight or flight. And I said to myself, I refuse to flee because I was literally trying to shrink myself my whole life, you know, make sure I don't step on anybody's toes. I was a meek and loving child. I obeyed, I'd done everything right. I was the most loving being, and I still am. But I was tired of just being, you know, tortured like this, especially this way. I mean, I didn't do anything. So I was very nice back. I was nice back to this homeless person, and they didn't know what to do with it. They literally turned around and just left. They didn't know what to do with this when you're not fighting them on their level. And another part of me did come through, a higher part. So, you know, other dimensional parts that are able to handle this did come through and speak for me in mind-to-mind conversations with them. And I was just like a side observant. I mean, it's such a trippy thing to experience. Like it's really hard to put in words because, you know, you paint a picture as much as you can, but it's nothing like experiencing and living it.
I've
First
heard
of
of
all, I
similar
never heard of
things.
it.
Yeah, I've heard of similar
I
things where
know, but
one's future self comes and when someone is in a period of dire crisis and,
yes, that's
encourages
what it
them that
was.
they're going to pull through it because they have something to do in the future. Now, just to backtrack a little bit, from the information you sent me and what we talked about earlier, it seems that there was a number of events that happened after your activation in 2004, which may have led to this kill attempt in 2010. You talked about a recall of past lives and in the beginning of rescue
Yes.
dreams and other things.
Yes.
Did you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, there's that in between. Meaning, here I am. My mindset was I'm responsible for myself. I'm responsible to heal myself, to heal all my distortion, to heal my body, mind, emotion, and be the most authentic self in true original form, as we all have that. That thought always was there. It never left. I'm always on a path of healing, improving, bettering, you know, shedding something that I know it's not good, and embodying better, that's more loving ways. So my mind was never going towards I'm actually warring with someone. That's like not even in this personality that I am here would never cross my mind. I don't even like to argue with someone or be in conflict. That just like I get anxiety over it. I don't even like to say anything bad to people. So to go to dream states, suddenly I'm remembering my past lives where it just seemed to be my what they call your incarnational self. When there's one of you here, that automatically means that you have another level of yourself right now on a planet that part of your soul group. Because we always incarnate in every dimension in sets of 12s. So it ends up being 144 on the highest level. In one dimensional spectrum, meaning while you're in this earth and through all the 15 dimensions. So I did remember not all 11, but majority of it. And then it started bouncing to the future lives and past lives and current incarnational lives. And I thought, okay, cool, that's pretty cool to know. Not sure what to do with it. It didn't really bring me that much, you know. Maybe I was assembling all my, you know, selves and becoming more aware, which was, it was neat, it was nice. But I didn't know really, is there so much meaning to it? Suddenly, some of my dreams started to shift into like right after 2004, I had my son in 2005. The sleep paralysis starts, and it's regular, like once a week, twice a week. And then there's nothing for 2-3 weeks, and then it's like two times a day. And then it was like a week straight. I mean, it was just insane. And I couldn't figure out what the sleep paralysis is all about. So I didn't see beings. It was just this thing would come over me in waves, and I can hear the humming sound or electrical crickling sound. It was just always different. And I just kept thinking something is off, you know, energetically something is happening, but I couldn't, I'm not here to jump to any conclusions. I'm very much a skeptic. I'm very much detective, and I like to be very objective about my stuff, meaning if it is something I don't want it to be, I will accept it, even though I don't like it. I like facts and I like the truth. I don't want to just hear what, you know, what I want to hear. I'm not about that. That doesn't help my growth. So I got my memories back, and suddenly in 2009, 8 and 9, I'm starting to, you know, have these journeys with these beings that I never see. They're always behind me. I can sense them. They're never a threat to me. I just kind of feel like I know these guys, and they're there to train me, and I have a working relationship with them, or him or her, depending, and they will bring me to these places. So first one started in Croatia, and I thought it was a one-off. So here I'm in this major city, and I'm in an underground base. It's full of reptilians. It's a smaller base, very small. There's probably like 10 or 15 reptilians, and they're literally holding hostage about 30 people. These are men, women, children, elderly, young, I mean, everybody. And what I realized later on was that in general, if you want to assist someone or something, whether it be a person, a planet, or whatever, you can't do it from the outside. You have to become part of it in order to change it from the inside. This whole thing of liberating this earth from being a prison planet, it's an inside job. That's why we need boots on the ground.
Absolutely.
That's why you can't expect ETs to show up on the sky and do job for you. They're not allowed to do that. They're not. This is a non-interference, basically experiment on a planet. There's so many plants and herbs and consciousness and beings and humans, but they're not allowed to change course like that. So to work around this universal law, they cannot be broken. What beings of benevolent intention decided to do without breaking the law is to incarnate. The only way to change it is to go on the inside. So basically, that was my first inside job. So I entered into the I willingly went there, by the way. They didn't capture me. I have willingly signed up to go there and be captured, taken there, which they molested me in every possible way, sexually. And we all had each slave, each a master. We were slaves. So I was assigned mine, and everybody had theirs, and they did whatever they wanted with us, whenever. But I stayed there X amount of time because I was monitoring exactly what I'm there for, a reason and a job. So I had to put all my emotional trauma, I'm going there, to the side and say I have a job to do, which is to get these people out of here. So what I would be doing is watching when they're coming, when they're leaving, who's watching who, what is their repetition pattern, what is the entrance, where is the exit, where is what. Once I figured, this is not overnight. This must have been like a few weeks or something that I was there. Eventually, I figured they do have a pattern, and it's not completely random. I organized basically a getaway, and I told all the people there on a hush, hush, on a low, that we're going to get the hell out of there. And they all kind of looked at me like, there's no way, you can't get out of here alive. Like, we're done. And I didn't want to explain myself too much because apparently I had a plan. So I just remember pulling them all out of the base. It is literally a vortex hole, like a black dimensional black hole that was a pocket where they resided in dimensional form, not as much physical because they can be both, but this was more of a blend of the two. So I pull them out, I get them to the beach area, and this is where I know this is the city that I'm referencing, Split, is because I looked back and I remember saying to myself, remember this place and this location in the city to myself. And when I woke up, I actually recognized it because I've been in Split millions of times. I had vacations there. And then standing on the beach, I told them to grab each other's hands, and I said, just hold each other's, you know, hands. And they did that. They were looking at me like I'm crazy, but they're believing in me at this point because I made this happen. And I knew that they have basically, it looks like a submarine that is in dimensional form that will go in the ocean part. That is their kind of like alarm system. They're basically surveilling stuff, so it's under control. So I had to wait for it to pass so we don't get caught. So it passed, and I gave a signal that we're going to go. I said, okay. I said, listen, we're going to fly. I know this sounds really wacky, but I said to them, don't worry, we're going to fly. And they looked at me and going, we can't fly? Like, what's wrong with you? And I said, just intend and fly. And I remember pulling them up first off the ground. And literally, we were like a flock of birds in a V formation because I was dragging them behind me. And this giant vortex of water from the ocean opened up. And the only job I had to do is just hover over it because it was like a dimensional spot, like a gate. And I hovered over it, and we literally got out of that dimension. So apparently, I got them out. And when I woke up, that was my first dream, thinking, well, that was a one-off. That was so strange. That was bizarre. Another weird dream, or my dream state experiences that I don't know where it goes. So little did I know that apparently I was pissing off reptilians and draconians, and I was pissing. I was stepping all over their toes. I was literally stealing their food away from them. I was stealing basically people away from them. I was sabotaging their plans, and it never stopped. Another one was... another one I had was in New York, where I met with two people on a cruise ship. I remember that detail. We're sitting around the table. We are in the middle of the water in a giant cruise ship, and we're making arrangements for this. Meaning, to me, these people exist. These are earthly people right now. They have access to this place in New York because they're on the inside. So I'm working as an insider with the insiders, basically. And I'm making this plan, and I just remember telling them, I don't remember the details. I just remember saying, okay, I'll see you in New York. That's how I know it's there. I'm pretty sure it's there, or it's in that proximity. And next thing I know, in the same dream, I show up in this underground base. I remember the tunnels being carved out. I remember the lighting on the side of the tunnel so I could recognize it if I saw it. Some parts were dirt ground, some parts were like almost cemented, and some were like asphalted. So these two people, there were a couple, a woman and a man, show up. They have the white coats on with the little tags on them, and they bring my tag. So I have official way to enter the places because I have an ID. And they dress me up, and they pick up the little, looks like a go-kart that has like a standing back, meaning a third person can stand in the back of it. And they hop in it. It's a little white little thing. And we're scooting around this underground base through these tunnels. And we show up in this giant metal door. I mean, this door felt like it was about 3 feet in depth, meaning like wide.
Thickness.
And it had a thickness of it. It was round and circular, probably good 15 feet in diameter. And it had like an interlocking, it wasn't split in the middle. It was like interlocking zigzag kind of pattern. So it really locks up. And then on the side of it, it has a pin thing. So you're supposed to do a pin. You're supposed to do the card. I'm not even sure. So it wasn't as digital as it is these days with the, you know, iris of your eye or a fingerprint or anything like that. It was a little bit old fashioned. And I remember going up, putting in my, swapping my card in there, and I got the code in, and we open up this door. I hop in the back of this thing. We're driving. And as soon as we entered the space, it felt like a giant dome, probably size of a New York City.
Wow.
This thing was huge. It was, I can feel, because when I'm in that state, I do have obviously my metaphysical abilities tuned in. Here, I don't really have much, but I do sometimes. And I can sense almost like a sonic, or how you'd call that, by sonar. Like I can just sense how big the space is. Even though it's pitch black, we just have the lights from our little go-kart. And it's dirt, like dirt. There's no grass, just plain dirt. And it's pitch quiet and it's pitch black. And out of blue, I have this giant reptile start screeching at us. So we put the lights out because we went into that direction. And this thing looked like a prehistoric bird that you would see in books with the giant beak and teeth. And it was probably 6 foot tall with giant leathery type wings. Actually, some people reported later on they've seen them in mountains flying around now again. Not sure, I forgot the name of these birds, but I just remember yelling at my people, get out, turn around, get out. Obviously, they were already turning around. I didn't have to say it, but just literally, we were chased out of there. The bird had issues moving around like it was sick. And thank God it wasn't as fast. So we got out. We did close the door. It didn't manage to follow us out. And I remember waking up and going, you know, talking to my guides, or if you want to call them guardians, and going, what the hell was that about? And the impression I got, that was us knowing about this base. And then the idea was to get in to see if there's anything to salvage, anything to rescue, anything of consciousness that we can communicate and help get out. But being that these beings over there are really like a hybrid things they're trying to do, or I'm not sure if they're trying to bring the genetics from dinosaur time back up again. I'm not sure what experiment is there. But basically, there was not much to rescue, let's put it that way, because we really don't want these birds flying around right now. They'll probably eat all of us. So we just kind of left it be. So that was that one. Next thing you know was Ireland. Ireland was also probably before that. When was that? 2011. So group of people I known went to Ireland for kind of like a grid work, because I was part of that group for a minute. And I remember thinking, oh man, I hope they're having fun in Ireland. And so this workshop or grid work was there for about 2 weeks or something, or a week. And I was like, man, I wish I can go, but I didn't go. I couldn't go. I was in States. During their time there, I go to sleep one of the nights and I wake up on a shore of Ireland. It's green grass, and I see the ocean, and I see little trees here and there. It's a little bit on a countryside or something, and I know I'm in Ireland. So I'm going, okay, why am I here? Again, I have two guides next to me, and little guides. They feel like tiny little guys on each side of me, and I'm just there, and I'm going, okay, now what? And I turn around, and I see this black chopper. It looks like a black ops type miniature, like a one person chopper. And I see he's literally landed right there, and I see a human in there with his headphones on and all the gear. He's dressed like a black op, and he's communicating, but I can hear him from, like, you know, 20 feet away. I can still hear exactly what he's saying through his buds of the, you know, speaker, going, they're not here, I don't see anything, it's clear here, you know, I've been here for a while, something in that way, reporting back to whoever. And I'm literally in front of him, so I start to really panic, thinking, shit, this guy can see me. Like, if he sees me, I'm dead meat. Like, I'm already pissing off beings left and right. This is the last thing I want to do in my life, is just keep pissing people off. Like, I'm good. I really don't want to do this, right? And suddenly, my guys behind me realize I'm terrified, like, shit, you know? They can see my face, they can recognize, I don't want this. And they calm me down instantly, going, don't worry, you're invisible. We put a cloak. You're fine. And I'm like, oh, thank God. I'm like, shit, that was terrifying. And then I kind of had fun with him. I'm like, oh my God, he can't see me. This is awesome. So I rocked up all the way up to him in his face, and he can't see me. And I'm literally checking out his face. I'm checking out his little chopper. I'm checking out his instruments. And, you know, my guys kind of let me just have fun with it for a minute, just observing him, watching without no fear, because I'm right there and he can't see me. So after I had my minute of fun with that, I realized it's probably not about that. But my guys kind of give me this little hint, like, okay, we have more important things to do than this. I'm like, okay. And I turn around and they say, we have someone here that would like to talk to you. And I turn around, and from the distance of this grass that goes keeps going, it's like really country again. And then on the right side, there's just ocean everywhere. So it's a cutoff, like what like a beach would be, but it's not. It's all grass. And there's this being that's coming towards me, and it's glowing. And so it's like a semi-etheric being. It's not fully physical, and it's not, you know, astral or too see-through. It's pretty solid, but it's glowing light, literally. He's my size, like my height. And interestingly enough, he was this neon green being, literally neon green, but on the inside he had a different spectrum of frequency, so it was neon pink. So where his eyes would be, his nostrils, his lips, and his ears protruded this pink, neon pink come out. But the outside was neon green. I mean, it was the weirdest thing ever. I mean, he looked like he was bald. It was just an outline of a humanoid being. And this being had also two guys behind him, following him. So we literally met halfway point. And I looked into this being's eyes, and I instantly recognized him as my comrade and as my good friend that I've known for eons, as though we've done this gazillion times, like way too often. And I just remember in my mind, doing telepathic conversation, of course. And I went, oh, my God, I haven't seen you in like forever. Like, so good to see you. You know, when you see a good friend, there's just,
yeah.
Oh, my God, it was so exciting. I was like, missed him. And it was like, couldn't wait to see him again kind of thing. But he goes, yeah, nice to see you too. But, you know, kind of like time is limited here and we just have to really talk and like I have to go. Like these kind of encounters can be very dangerous if we're being monitored. So, and we are being watched at all times. So they make sure it's quick to the point and we got to go. And I remember gazing in his eyes and he was transferring information mind to mind, which means I couldn't unlock it right now and I couldn't tell you what we talked about. But it was pretty heavy-duty stuff. It wasn't like, la-di-da, I missed you, I love you, you know, none of those. More like, look, this is the plan, this is what we're doing, this is what needs to be done, this is serious work. You know, make sure you're doing this and that. That kind of feel. Very much like, we need to get this stuff finished. And I remember waking up going, well, it was nice to see him for a second, but man, I kind of felt even greater responsibility waking up. I already had it always with the whole me being responsible and beings around me and just being responsible for planet and this whole thing, how it's going to turn out. I always had that sense of responsibility, even as a child. It never leaves. And I just felt like I had it even more now. And I'm like, oh, God, this seems like just a startup to whatever I'm yet to do. And it wasn't a fun thing to know, but I knew this is what I signed up for. And then I confirmed, I called one of my friends from the Ireland workshop after they came back and they said, man, there was black choppers everywhere while we were there. They were just constantly following us. I'm like, I know, I saw it in my dream state. I was there. So basically kind of correlated exactly what I saw in my dream states and my experience. So that was one of them in Ireland. And then I had a really interesting experience with a cat, a physical cat that I found here. That I had a friend of mine adopt. She was a Persian cat, and for some reason, another friend of a friend let me know she's giving her cat away. So I couldn't have her, so I figured, let me call my friend, maybe he wants her. Little did I think that this cat is meant to pass through in my life, even for a second, just to know about the cat. And so I homed the cat, everything is fine. She ends up in his house. I saw her picture. I fell in love with her. Her name was Amorea. And I go to sleep that night after she got homed, and I literally swapped bodies with her. Like, I don't know if she came into my body. I don't think so. But she definitely vacated her body as a consciousness and let me become a cat, literally to be in a cat's body. So I go to sleep. I wake up in my dream state, open my eyes, and I'm literally a cat, and I can feel the sensations of being with the little legs. I'm walking around, and you feel so feather light. There is no weight to your movement. It just feels so agile and cool. And I remember hopping on the bed of my friend, the one I asked to home this cat, and I'm staring at him, and he's sleeping because it's early morning hours. And I can see what he's wearing. I can see his room. I see his bed is on the floor. I see he's wearing like a patterned like boxers and the sheet and the colors of sheet and artwork. The only thing is when you're looking through the cat's eyes, it seems a bit fuzzy. Like it's not as clear as we see it. And their sides, like you see wider because the eyes are actually larger. So it's a little off, but I'm like, wow, this is really freaking cool. And then I started mind-to-mind conversation with him, almost like talking on his higher self when he's sleeping. And I remember asking a few questions, and he immediately responded as though he's not sleeping, meaning his consciousness here went vacation somewhere, went dreaming, astral traveling, but I'm talking to his higher self. So I gained a whole new respect for cats. You can communicate with your cats and every animal. And they don't just speak to you in this consciousness here, but they can speak to your higher self. So it's kind of really cool. And I woke up and I'm going, whoa, that was so freaky. I also purring. I started purring, and the chest vibration that he emits is just so wonderful. It's really hard to put in words to just feel yourself as a cat for a minute. It's amazing. So I woke up. I'm so ecstatic. I'm like, this is so amazing. I call him up and I say, do you have these artwork on your walls? Do you have these bed sheets? Did you wear shorts? Did you? He goes, yeah, that's like creepy. Why do you know that? I said, because I was in her body last night. And I later on, my thought was that she's part of my soul consciousness group, maybe just in different form. But she must be part of my soul consciousness because I didn't invade her body. This wasn't like a possession. This was more like I can also be in this body because we are the same. She just looks like a cat. I look like a human. Maybe I even exist as a rock somewhere, a mineral here. You know what I mean? It's very possible. So that was neat. So not all were negative. There's other plenty that were beautiful and mind-boggling and expanding in that way, which keeps the balance on my growth. Because if I only had negatives and I, you know, only had positives, I would think there's something not right with that.
Yeah.
So after that one, in 2010 also, there was a Mexico trip with a group that I mentioned. And they went on a, I don't know, 10-day cruise ship in Mexico, doing grid work as well. And, you know, I just kept in touch with these guys here and there. And I only knew about a few people, two, three, and not all of them all were on this trip either. I just remember the person that was leading the trip. And I kept, you know, doing my meditation at home and really being in tune. And I meditated for about 5-6 hours a day back in the day. Like, I was consistent and persistent. It was my go-to every day. Didn't matter what, I will meditate and work on myself. And I was really in tune with a lot of things. And I remember going in one of these 10 days that were there, going to sleep and going, you know what, I really wish I was in Mexico right now. I really, really wish I was there. Because first of all, it's Mexico. Second of all, they're probably having fun there. And like, I kind of felt bad being stuck home again and I not attending any of the stuff or traveling or, you know, meeting new people. And for some reason, that thought stuck that I wish I was there. I wish I was there. I wish I was there. Well, I woke up next day. By the way, nothing happened. I woke up just like any other day, continued my life. And it wasn't until 2012 that I actually met this person who was leading this group to Mexico and did other grid work stuff around, that I was there. And she goes, you know, my daughter says she met you before. And I said, no, I've never met your daughter. I know you have one. I didn't even know you had another one. She goes, yeah, my older daughter. And she's talking to me. I met her daughter and she's talking to me like we're best friends. Like, I told her everything. And I'm looking at her going, I've never met you. Why is she talking to me like she knows me? This is so bizarre. I mean, I'm really, that's cool that she's so comfortable with me, but why is she so too comfortable almost, you know? Like, there's a certain code of behavior when you just meet someone, you know? And it just seemed like she knows me forever. And it wasn't until the third night, you know, she goes home and we talk for a minute. She goes home. Her mom calls me again and she goes, I need you to come over here because my daughter is freaking out saying she met you like in Mexico on a cruise ship. And I'm like, I wasn't there. She goes, I know, but this is so bizarre. You need to hear the story. So I rock up to her house. I go in the house and her daughter is about 2 years older than me. She's looking at me like she's seeing a ghost or she's seeing someone really like falling from the sky. And I'm like, is everything okay? She goes, are you telling me you don't remember we talked like in 2010 on a cruise ship? I said, I wasn't there. She goes, yes, you were. And I'm like, not me down here wasn't there. She goes, well, for 3 nights in a row, you would show up when I would be on my deck. Like there's a deck with the pool area on one of the highest floors, which is like only expensive suites are there. And she goes, I was even wondering how you can afford it because you had the key and you would just swipe a door in order to even get to this expensive area where, you know, suites were God knows how long or the rooms. And she goes, you would meet me at the pool because I was there every night and you would show up between like 5:30, 6 p.m. and you would be there till about 8. And then 8 o'clock sharp, you would just say, I have to go. And you would leave and then you would show up again and you did it for 3 nights. And all 3 nights, you would sit next to me in this like egg-shaped chairs that were there next to the pool. And we talked about everything. You said you shared me about your life story and where you grew up and how you grew up and all the hardships you've been through and everything I know about your kids and, you know, my, you know, immigration paperwork issues I had here. Like, you told me everything. I was like, really? That's cool. I said, I'm sorry, but I don't remember anything about you because it wasn't really me down here. So maybe another part of me did that, but not me. And her mom kept pitching in saying, are you sure she wasn't like astral or semi-etheric or different? She's like, no, she was solid. She was physically solid like you and I are. Like she wasn't, she was flesh. And so she's freaking out at this point. And I'm like, well, I don't mean to freak you out. I had very strange experiences in my life. And I'm sorry if this, you know, startles you. I'm really not that surprised anymore. But that's kind of a cool story, though. And I said, you know, I'm sure the whole point of this wasn't about me just chatting up with you for 3 days. There must have been a good reason why I was there 3 times, and you know, for 3 nights in a row. Can you tell me why you think I was there? Because I don't remember anything. She goes, well, yeah, I was suicidal at the time and I was really ready to kill myself. And when I actually decided to do it, you started showing up and started being my friend and talking to me and sharing more of yourself. And through hearing your story, I decided not to kill myself. She said, by the end of the 3rd day, I felt super empowered and realized that, you know, we all have hardships and that I can do this and I have a mission just like everybody else and it's going to be okay. And I said, cool. Okay, good. So good was done. That's all that matters.
Wow.
I helped. That's awesome. I mean, I knew it wasn't just me going for some really stupid reason, you know, manifesting apparently on a cruise ship to this person I never physically met. So as long as I helped, that's all I really cared about. I'm like, good. That's cool. The rest really doesn't matter. I don't know how I got there, but I got there. So it's all that matters. So that was interesting to have a kind of like, I don't know, confirmation that some stuff is really real. It does happen, which made me wonder if in other, you know, experiences, did I physically manifest? Was I there just an astral? Was it just, you know, it physical?
You could have gone into another place or dimension and resonated with the local frequency. So you could have been, you know, physical, corporeal there, but out of phase with here. Or like that time when you were at that beach and then the helicopter came down, you were still out of phase with them. They couldn't see you, you know.
Yeah,
so I think that's a good thing. Now, you also mentioned something about spaceship spy missions. Did you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. Yes, basically that was initial glimpses. Like my memories of Dreamtime were very short and brief with those, but that predates even my 2008-09 dream of going to Croatia in underground base with reptilians. So even before that, before all the underground bases I went to, the dreams started from me healing to kind of like subconscious messages to, you know what I mean? You just can't feel the difference in dream states. I can kind of categorize them with, that's me talking to me, that's journey, that's a mission, that's a parallel earth, that's astral, lower astral. That's, you know, I have a little feel for that. But these dreams were, they felt very much an astral experiences or slash memories. Basically, me literally would, it's really bizarre to explain, but it's like being a spy. So I would show up, for an example, there's one dream, I'm showing up on this dock. It looks like a dock, and there's a spaceship docked at this, looks like a beach. Basically, where the ocean would be, there was like a drop-off, and there's a concrete, basically like a road or whatever, like a piece of concrete, and there's a spaceship docked. And I would just walk up to these groups of people. It seems like hundreds of people, like 400 people are there. And it's like walking up to a conference, right? And I just start mingling with people. And I would chat up, hey, how are you? And chat with them and talk to them and be like, oh, cool, so what's going on? And they would tell me, and, you know, somebody would pitch in and be like, oh, yeah, 2 o'clock, this is happening. You know, in a week, we're going to do this and that. And, oh, okay, cool. And, you know, I'm basically gathering information, right? I'm really not part of the group, but I'm trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Then I would just rock in with them, go on a spaceship, and I'm like, I have no idea where's what, but, you know, there's rooms, there's hallways, there's conferences, there's presentations, there's all this stuff happening, and I'm just roaming around pretending like I'm there for purpose. And, you know, sitting in these conferences a little bit here, a little bit there, and then I remember towards the end of the dream, I'm going, Oh yeah, can you know, asking a random person. Well, can you please remind me when are we leaving here? Because you know, I have stuff to do. I just want to be late with that. But where are you guys leaving? And they're like, oh yeah, in about 20 minutes. I'm like, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Which means shit, I got to get off in 20 minutes. I'm not going with you. You know, I need to get the hell out of there. And they're just figuring out the elevators and exits and shit. I don't even know where I'm at. But I would scramble basically last minute. I would get out, but. That will be my scouting mission to figure out, are these guys up to no good, or they're up to some good, are they observers, or are they conniving some freaking horrible plan for humanity? That's my job. So and I do reports, and I will basically report like, this is what I've seen, this is what happened there. Another one is me being on my spaceship, a little scout ship, and I was bored. I was bored out of my mind. If I'm not doing something, I'm bored. That includes me, my personality down here. So I ended up convincing one of my comrades, my friends, to say, hey, let's pop out and see what's out here. And we really were not supposed to leave this scout ship. So we get off, and basically we were docked behind another spaceship that couldn't see us. Again, we were cloaked. We were literally right behind them. They're docked. We're right behind them, but we're invisible to them. And we're monitoring what they're doing. So we popped out. Once we popped out, I don't think we were cloaked anymore, which was a problem. Obviously, beings can see us. And we sneak into this spaceship. Obviously, it's all my brilliant idea. Of course, like, not very smart, but whatever. So we pop into this little tiny ship. I know nothing. I'm not briefed on this. I have no idea who they are. I'm not told, like, these beings are on there. Watch out for this. Nothing. But I want to know. So I go in there and I'm roaming these narrow hallways with my friend next to me. And we're pretty quiet. Nothing is happening. It seems really quiet ship, little tiny ship. Out of nowhere, there's a little long hallway, walls on each side. And on the left side is the door to something else, which we didn't know there was a door. And it's a pretty long hallway. Suddenly, there's a being that steps through the door and turns towards us and is literally staring at us. There's nowhere we can hide. I mean, it's looking right at us. And I'm still walking towards it and trying to be kind of like fearless. And this being looked like what we call a Sasquatch. And, you know, pretty fuzzy, pretty hairy, humanoid face-like, and probably 8 feet tall. But he's wearing an overall. Like a blue overall that was completely dirtied from like a coal, like a fossil of sorts, fossil fuels or coal or oil or something, which gave me an impression that he's captive there, like for labor to work. And I looked at him and I wasn't afraid of him. And he's looking at me, I'm looking at him, and there was just a weird understanding, and that was instant, which was, I'm not here to hurt you, and I know that you're in your heart, you're not going to hurt me either because you're actually a good guy. And I remember looking at him and said, could you please let us go? And it wasn't really pleading, like, please, I beg you, but it was, please, please let us go. And for 2 seconds, he's just looked at us and then realized that we really were not like going to harm anybody. And he scoots to the sides and opens this kind of like little, I don't know, dangly things off the door, and we walk through and get out. And I went back, and I remember thinking to myself, "Oh my God, please don't do that again. That was stupid. I could have been in much trouble than that if I, you know, bumped into someone who was actually running the ship, which were not the good guys, but they were holding captive Sasquatch people." So I'm thinking that's why we were there. We're trying to get these guys to gain their freedom again. So they must be more powerful than Sasquatch, so which is troubling, because they're pretty powerful beings. What was after that? I mean, there was really random things that happened. After that, I had a underwater base shown to me that looks like an island base. I mean, I keep saying like not Bahamas, but the water was clear, light blue. I don't know. Is it Okinawa Island or something like that looks like that? Not sure where on planet it is, but I could probably, if I find it, I could recognize it. And we were shown. I was basically went to sleep. I just literally woke up at the beach with a being next to me on my right, and it was really tall being, which I could never see, but I sensed the being, And I wasn't scared. And I'm going, okay, where I'm at now, what is this? And this being is telepathing to me that they're going to show me something. And the water is about up to your ankle. It was clear water. And the water stretches out for like, I don't know, a mile or something, really like shallow water, but it was very clean. And I could see it's like a jungle all the way around. So it's a pretty secluded area. There is no humans there. There's no houses and, you know, no like beachgoers. And in a distance, I see this guy in an army suit. Like he had a hat on and he had a rifle in his back and he's full on gear from like army, like a camel. And my being says, okay, we're going to go up to him. And it was interesting because we didn't walk through the water. We didn't, it literally was like hovered so fast. One second we were on a beach, next second we were right in front of him. And my being is talking to this guy, which I can't hear what it's saying, but the understanding was that I have a permission or a security clearance to go in. And this guy looks at me and he just kind of nods his head like, yes. And my being makes me turn around and tells me that we are going to go through the water, which is only like a foot tall. And there is going to be an opening, like a chamber, that we have to swim through that water, pop up into this like a door that's like a pocket before we can enter this underwater and under the seabed base. So he goes in first and then he's basically kind of like pulling me right behind him. I can feel the water on my face. I can feel like I can't breathe because there's water rushing in my face. It's really dark and there's like a suctioning feeling. And of course I wake up just when I get into the whole pocket of like an air chamber. So, you know, to modulate the water and stuff. And I guess we went in. Now, when I woke up, I can't tell you 100% what is it about, but I had a feeling that it's probably size of like a smaller spaceship. Like it's oval. It's a different kind of metal that's made out of like aluminum-ish shiny metal on the inside. It's very plain. It's just like, and that's like their monitoring base. They have lots of screens and they're just inputting data. And that's, I'm not sure exactly what they do, but they definitely monitor. It's like their central report place. Other than that, they made me kind of like wipe up that part of the memory for probably security reasons, but that's all I can say about that one.
So, so that was kind of a monitoring place by the U.S. military or a human military at any rate?
There was human military that was guarding it, correct. So my impression after having about, what was that I mentioned, about 5, 6, 7 underground bases, that there is a fraction of humans that are basically working on the inside job to do to give us information on the inside job again so we can transfer information to the other guys. Like we are two middlemen right there. Not everybody in black op community is okay with being in a black op, but they can get out because they will get killed and their family will get killed. But what they can do is give the information out to secure people. They're knowing they're not going to be in trouble in order to literally also help themselves and everybody else that could be hurt in this process. So I, as a joke, named myself as part of the white team op. We can do exactly what a black team can do, but we're white team, meaning we do this for the good.
Yes.
Even, you know, because if you want to take care of an issue like what the black ops are doing, you have to have an equal in team to take care of it. You can't just expect for it to go away by itself. So guardian races have created such teams. This is nothing new. This is 250 billion years old, if not a million or billion years old. I mean, there are such things that they're called, we are mobile unit basically of the Azerite security team. And when I read this information as, oh, Azerite security, it's a Templar security team, I always thought, you know, it happened billions of years ago. That's kind of cool. No, this job is still here today. This is how it looks like. And I'm remembering it through my dreams. If you want to say, you know, I'm here, I'm doing this kind of work, well, how does it look like? But that's how it looks like. You literally are going in underground, you know, it's on ships, you're underground bases, you're being shown the ways. I have meetings with naval people of like NATO directors of sorts. I had people that look like Majestic 12 guy that when I saw a picture, I'm like, holy shit, that's him. I actually interrogated the guy, but in a weirdest way, actually, too. You know, we actually have to have a plan, too. The good guys have to do a plan, too. And it's not playing it dirty, but you got to play it on the same level yes. that these guys are playing. Otherwise, right. how do you think you're going to win? A whole lot of praying, a whole lot of wishing, a whole lot of that is not going to make these guys stop. It just doesn't work like that. So as much as I would love to say, I'm a healer, I'm a lover, I just want to meditate all day and really mind my business, which I still kind of do, but when I go to sleep time and dream time, this is really my job.
Yeah.
And I don't really like it. It's not fun. I get in trouble. They sometimes figure out who I am, and I was almost killed in 2010 over it. Yeah, it's really, it gives me an anxiety, but it also gives me some sort of like, I do have a job and I do want to make this place better place and help humanity. If this is how I signed up to do it, then that's my job. I'm not hurting people. I'm helping people. And it sounds awful to say I'm a spy, but I'm spying on bad guys, if that makes you feel any better. I'm not spying on good guys, you know. I was interrogated as well on Spaceship. You know, they pulled me up and interrogated me, and I let them just ramble about me, and they figured out who I am. But by the end of it, they let me go because this was government. They couldn't figure out who I was. So they're like, fine, you know what? She's no threat. Let her go. And they did. I'm like, cool, bye.
Hold that thought, because we're just getting started and we've reached the end of the first segment, and I definitely want to know more about the naval and NATO people and the Majestic people that you'd had encounters with in the second half. You've been listening to our very special guest talk about her experiences. This is Diaphim you've been listening to, talking about her various experiences with ETs, interdimensional beings. I would consider you to be an interdimensional operative. Anyhow, we've reached the end of the first half. For our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to the Cosmic Switchboard Show, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the second segment.